This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehia Suhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
What the ANC now has to do in order to convince the people that we mean it this time is to create the proper checks and balances, systems and processes to make sure that crooks should not enter the ANC because their destination is the budgets.
That's ANC veteran Tokyo Sexwale, a veteran of South Africa's ruling African National Congress, on how it needs to tackle corruption to bolster public confidence in its leadership. Details coming up also. Nigeria's army says it has freed hundreds of hostages held by Boko Haram extremists. And Southern Africa appeals for $5.5 billion in aid due to acute grain shortages from droughts. These stories and more on African News Tonight. We start with our top story. South African leaders have launched a $5.5 billion humanitarian aid appeal as the region faces acute grain shortages due to El Niño-induced droughts. Leaders from the region's bloc, the Southern Africa Development Community, met yesterday to discuss the crisis following widespread drought and flooding that have left millions without enough to eat. Mokondisi Dube reports from Habrone.
In a communique released after the virtual meeting, leaders from 15 SADC member states agreed to launch an appeal to help affected populations. The leaders said the SADC regional humanitarian appeal will augment domestic resources in response to the impact of El Nino weather patterns. El Nino resulted in warmer and drier conditions, leading to record-breaking droughts across the region in 2023 and the beginning of 2024. SADC Executive Secretary Elias Makhosi said the humanitarian appeal will be revised in August as more member states finalize their assessments on the impact of El Nino and look toward an expected change to the La Nina weather pattern later this year.
Summit called on member states to be proactive and strengthen anticipatory action programs to mitigate climate risks such as the La Nina phenomenon, which is projected for the 2024-25 season.
Makhosi says the United Nations Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs, OCHA, and the Food and Agriculture Organization, FAO, have pledged a combined $43 million toward SADC's humanitarian appeal.
Summit acknowledged the pledge of $33 million from OCHA and $10 million US from FAO towards the SADC regional humanitarian appeal, and appealed for additional support from the international community to meet the urgent humanitarian needs in the affected member states and communities.
Angolan President João Lourenço, who chaired the Monday meeting, appealed to the international community to respond.
This is a very important step taken by the organization by launching this humanitarian appeal, and we hope that there will be due feedback on the part of the international community to support, to help us overcome this difficult moment that the region is facing.
El Nino has resulted in widespread crop failure within SADC and has resulted in national emergency declarations in Malawi, Zambia and Zimbabwe. Mqondisi Dube, VOA News, Habroni, Botswana.
Nigeria's army says it has rescued hundreds of hostages, mostly women and children, who had been held captive for months or years by Boko Haram extremists in the country's northeast. The French news agency AFP says the hostages were rescued late Sunday from a hideout in the Sambisi forest and have been handed over to authorities. Some of the girls had babies believed to have been born from forced marriages, as is often the case with female victims who are either raped or forced to marry the militants while in captivity. Boko Haram launched its insurgency in 2009 to establish Islamic Sharia law in the country. The UN says at least 35,000 people have been killed and 2.1 million displaced as a result of the extremist violence.
Music.
The U.S. State Department yesterday condemned an attempted coup in the Democratic Republic of Congo, and a spokesman said it is extremely concerned about reports that Americans were involved. DRC officials say a neutralized U.S. citizen-led attack Sunday on the palace and on the residence of a close ally of President Felix Tshisekedi. They identified him as Christian Malanga. In addition, the DRC government says it has identified at least two other Americans who took part, including Malanga's son, Marcel Malanga. The State Department spokesman said the United States is monitoring the situation and will cooperate with DRC authorities to investigate the matter. However, he also said the State Department could not confirm that Christian Malanga is a U.S. citizen and that privacy rules prevent him from commenting on the cases of any American who are arrested overseas. According to the Associated Press, Marcel Malanga's mother said in an email that her son was innocent. The AP says Sawyer lives in the U.S. state of Utah. Paul Nanatulia, a research specialist with the Africa Center for Strategic Studies here in Washington, says the DRC is not a stable government, in part because of serious allegations of fraud in the election in 2018 that brought Tshisekedi to office and more concerns about his re-election last year. While Tshisekedi and his supporters have rejected those allegations, many international and domestic election observers have expressed concerns. Nanatulia tells VOA's Carol Van Dam there could be more attempts to oust the DRC government.
Because in Congo you have all the ingredients of this. Can't deliver proper election, can't deliver security, can't deliver laws that can allow rule of law, can't deliver laws that can allow citizen expression and independent institutions as provided for in the Sam City Agreement. When you have a situation like that, you are bound to have that kind of activity, right? Okay, embedded in the Congo, entrenched in that country, is this kind of thing. It's not the last time we're going to see it.
Tshisekedi was reelected for a second term as president in December, but he has yet to name a government, even 6 weeks after appointing a prime minister. Do you think that part of the unrest or the dissatisfaction among citizens is things like that?
Look, shambolic government produces shambolic elections, right? The East African forces that the government called in to pacify the Eastern DRC were kicked out of the country less than a year after they deployed. And now the United Nations forces have been requested to leave. What has the government put in place as a measure to supposedly get back security in that part of the country? It's recruiting militias. These militias are engaging in the same predatory activity that the Congolese army engages in, and that all these other mishmash of 140 rebel groups are engaging in. In that kind of scenario, you are going to have very sharp and intense anti-government feeling and anti-government sentiment. And anti-government sentiment can express itself in many ways. People can attack government installations. They can attack a state house. They can attack police stations and stuff like that. This is what happens when you have the kind of shambolic situation that you just talked about earlier.
The U.S. ambassador has said in a post on social media that she's very concerned by reports that American citizens were allegedly involved. I mean, is this going to ramp up tensions between the U.S. and the DRC?
Well, it depends on how the DRC wants to use it. If, in case, in a hypothetical scenario, if there's something the DRC is unhappy about, the United States, then presumably this is something they might use in their quarrel with the United States if they want to extract some concession from the U.S.
That was Paul Nanatulia, a research specialist with the Africa Center for Strategic Studies. He was speaking to VOA's Carol Van Dam in Washington. Kenyan President William Ruto is in the United States this week and on Thursday begins a state visit with President Joe Biden here in Washington. The White House says it chose Kenya for its first state visit for an African leader for many reasons, not least because the East African powerhouse has stepped up on the global stage, offering to staff a United Nations peacekeeping mission to Haiti that could see boots on the ground as early as this week. VOA White House correspondent Anita Powell recently sat down with Francis Brown, the Director for African Affairs at the National Security Council, ahead of Ruto's visit. In this excerpt, Brown begins by explaining the importance the White House places on the visit.
We're really excited about the state visit. As you noticed, President Biden's first African leader that he's hosting. It's actually the first state visit since 2008 for an African leader, so it is historic. We chose Kenya for a few reasons. Number one is the Kenya-U.S. partnership has really grown from a regionally focused one to a globally focused one. So we've been really pleased the way the Kenyans have stepped up to play leadership beyond their region. And we see a lot of complementarities in terms of what we're trying to do on climate, what we're trying to do on debt for the developing world, on security issues. So there's a lot to celebrate in the growth of that relationship. The second reason we wanted to have this state visit with Kenya is that we are both democracies, and our bond is very deep as democracies, and our bond is very deep on people ties. So there's a lot there in terms of the relationship. The third reason we wanted to have Kenya as our state visit, our first state visit from Africa this term, is that Kenya and the U.S. really work similarly in terms of bringing in the private sector to solve global challenges. So we'll be talking a lot about those. The deliverables you'll see are in the realms of technology, of clean energy, climate transition, of debt relief, of democracy, of people-to-people ties, and on health-related issues. So there's a lot to look for on that one.
So speaking of security agreements between the U.S. and Kenya, one issue on the table is that Kenya hopes to soon have peacekeepers in Haiti. First of all, why is this so important to the administration? What do you think the value of having Kenyan peacekeepers in Haiti is? And secondly, can you tell us about any other security agreements these two countries might come up with during the state visit?
We do really welcome the Kenyans raising their hand to help lead this multinational security support mission in Haiti, because it's kind of an example of what I just mentioned, of Kenya raising its hand to solve problems even outside of its region. So we really view this as a positive thing. We've been working really closely with them. As you may know, there's been planning underway for a number of months. It's included policing experts from around the world working to develop a concept of operations. Kenya's not going it alone. The U.S. has provided $300 million towards this. So it's a big thing for us. In terms of other security-related deliverables we can look ahead to, I don't want to preview specifically the state visit, but I would say watch this space, because I think security cooperation with Kenya is a really important plank.
What is that going to be focused on? Is it going to be focused on threats from Somalia or from other parts of East Africa?
So the U.S. and Kenya have long cooperated on Somalia. I think you can look for security-related announcements that go beyond that.
That was Frances Brown, the Director of African Affairs at the White House National Security Council. She was speaking with VOA White House correspondent Anita Powell. You're listening to African News Tonight on the Voice of America. And for more information on these and other stories from the continent, please see voaafrica.com. There you'll find all your favorite VOA radio and TV programs and a whole lot more. For world news, check out voanews.com. South Africa votes next Wednesday in an election expected to be the most competitive since the country's first democratic poll in 1994. In the first part of a series on the frontrunner parties, Darren Taylor focuses on the governing African National Congress, the ANC.
Cyril Ramaphosa swept to the presidency on a wave of optimism in early 2018. Following 9 years of alleged corruption and mismanagement under President Jacob Zuma, Ramaphosa, a former anti-apartheid trade unionist who helped draft South Africa's first democratic constitution, promised clean government. He acknowledged some senior African National Congress officials were corrupt, but only recently have prosecutors charged a few of them. Under Ramaphosa, unemployment, poverty, inequality, violent crime, economic stagnation, and electricity and water outages have intensified. Surveys show the crises mean the ANC is increasingly unpopular. Most predict the party will fall below the 50% plus one vote it needs to govern with the absolute power it has enjoyed for the past 30 years, and will have to form a coalition government. Ramaphosa recently told journalists the predictions are simply wrong.
I never think or dream or even contemplate a collision. I really don't. It's not even in my framework of thinking. It's just completely obliterated. Where collisions have been crafted, where there is no clear majority party, they've almost been completely unworkable.
Independent political analyst Muletsi Mbeki says the ANC's failures include allowing its black economic empowerment policies to create a tiny black elite, but not jobs for the masses. He also says it mismanaged and looted state-owned enterprises instead of privatizing them and built a large bureaucracy to run them. Yet, despite the ANC's many failures, Mbeki says, it's set to remain the country's dominant political force.
The ANC has made it clear it is not intending to change its ways. Ramaphosa has repeated time and again that he is sticking with the policy of black economic empowerment, that he is sticking with the policy of this hugely highly paid administrative class. He is not changing the education system to produce the people with the technical capability of a South Korean population.
ANC veteran Tokyo Sekwale acknowledges the party's made big mistakes since Zuma was elected president in 2009, and some members have committed crimes.
What the ANC now has to do in order to convince the people that we mean it this time is to create the proper checks and balances, systems and processes to make sure that crooks should not enter the ANC because their destination is the budgets.
But some of the alleged criminals in government are not low-level officials. There are allegations against high-profile ANC leaders, including Ramaphosa himself and Deputy President Paul Mashatile. They and other top ANC members implicated in corruption deny wrongdoing. Ramaphosa remains the face of the party's re-election campaign, which is based on several promises. They include ending corruption, better training for more police to fight crime, millions of public sector jobs, a national youth service to give work to millions of unemployed youngsters, higher grants to citizens living in extreme poverty, and expropriation of land for redistribution to poor people. Those pledges mean voters will return the ANC to power, says Party Secretary General Fikile Mbalula.
We are the first to admit the challenges that have faced us. So we are not selling a pipe dream to the people or fake and promising them things that cannot be achieved. If we look at our commitments that we have made in the past 5 years, we are 90% realizing those commitments, and that there have been challenges, corruption, and we know that COVID has pushed us back in terms of enabling our economy to move with speed for the realization of jobs. As we speak now, all jobs lost during COVID have been recovered.
But many critics, such as Mbeki, say that's not so. Next Wednesday, some political analysts say the ANC could pay a price for not solving the country's economic and crime problems. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
Guns have divided American voters, with nearly equal numbers taking opposite sides in the gun safety debate, according to the Pew Research polling. U.S. presidential candidates Joe Biden and Donald Trump also have opposing views on guns and gun control. VOA correspondent Scott Stearns has the story.
Nearly a third of Americans say they have a gun, according to the Pew Research Center. It's a constitutional right that often becomes a political issue for presidents when there are school shootings, including this one at a Florida high school in 2018, which ended with police evacuating students hiding in their classroom. Then President Donald Trump met with families of the victims to talk about gun violence.
It's been going on too long, too many instances, and we're going to get it done.
as President Trump's gun policies focused mostly on strengthening school security, including suggesting that teachers be armed. As a presidential candidate, Trump told the nation's top gun lobby Saturday that guns are vital to personal safety.
Our country is going to hell. Rapacious gangs and ruthless criminals are terrorizing our streets, and crooked Joe Biden's weakness has us teetering on the edge of World War III.
Accepting the National Rifle Association's endorsement, Trump said Biden is trying to, quote, rip firearms out of the hands of law-abiding citizens and gut gun rights guaranteed in the Constitution's Second Amendment.
We have to have a Second Amendment that's meaningful. If we don't, we're going to have levels of death and destruction like this country has never seen before.
When a teen gunman killed 19 children and two teachers at a Texas elementary school in 2022, President Biden said, quote, we have to act.
As a nation, we have to ask, when in God's name are we going to stand up to the gun lobby? When in God's name we do what we all know in our gut needs to be done.
The White House and Congress agreed on a bipartisan plan expanding background checks for younger gun buyers and helping states remove firearms from people who pose a danger to themselves or others. Biden is campaigning on those tougher laws, especially in communities marked by gun violence.
I signed the most significant gun safety law in nearly 30 years, which I know matters to the community that I mourn with. And I remember in Atlanta, Half Moon Bay, and Monterey Park.
There's been no further gun control legislation since Republicans won control of the House in 2022. House Minority Leader Hakeem Jeffries blames Trump supporters.
Today, the MAGA extremists in the do-nothing Republican Congress are leaving town without meaningfully addressing the gun violence epidemic in America.
U.S. voters' views on guns divide largely along political lines, with Pew Research data showing Republicans and Republican-leaning independents are more than twice as likely to own a gun as Democrats and Democratic-leaning independents. Scott Stearns, VOA News.
Witnesses say a three-story building being demolished collapsed in Kenya's capital, Nairobi, trapping several people. Red Cross workers are trying to locate those trapped, who witnesses said returned to salvage their belongings during a suspension in the demolition. A Red Cross official said two people were rescued and another two were still trapped. The exact number of people trapped is unclear, but one resident said as many as 10 young men did not make it out of the building. Authorities had ordered several buildings in the area to be demolished after heavy rains that caused widespread flooding across the country. A court in Mali has sentenced a well-known academic to 2 years in prison, one of which is suspended, for criticizing the military government. Speaking in a video released on social media, lawyer Ibrahim Marouf Sako said his client, Etienne Fakaba Sissoko, would appeal. Sissoko, an economist and professor at the University of Bamako, is the latest target of the military government's crackdown on criticism. The Associated Press says he was charged with harming the reputation of the state, defamation and dissemination of false news, disturbing the public peace over his 2023 book titled Propaganda, Agitation and Harassment, Government Communications During the Transition in Mali. In an online summary of the book, its publishers say it details the government's use of propaganda, agitation, manipulation, and even lies to win over public opinion. At a May 6th hearing, Sissoko defended his book as being based on facts and the works of outside experts. And with that, we wrap up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehia Suhibi in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. On behalf of our producer, David Van Dee, and our engineer, Jumbe Hamza, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.